should say I'm not Harry Connick, gentlemen. If you're feeling odd. Smuggle something into Mexico, but I feel the need lately to point out that it wasn't written because we smuggled something into Mexico. The tune showed up, I needed a title, and there it was. I made up a word, or so I thought. It turns out to be a perfectly legitimate string. It's one of those mysteries that we guitar players must deal with. You know, during the German Baroque, which was the hot spot if you were a lute player. Everything was downhill after that. And they discovered that Italian strings were so much more playable and musical than the strings they would get from, you know, the wherever, anywhere else. They're all made out of sheep mesentery and, you know, a sort of perishable string, in other words, and given to lumps and susceptibility to humidity and temperature. The frets as well were made out of sheep. And as you played, you had to learn the lumpology of each of 13 pairs of strings. You know, you hit it before or after the lump or on the lump, depending on what sort of sonority you're looking for and what sort of influence your transient is expected to have on the progression of the piece you've just so foolishly begun to play. I'm suspecting because you haven't taken the time to learn the lumps on these 26 strings. I just can't conceive of this. And not only that, if you screwed up, you had to roll the fret, you know, back and forth with your thumb, which is also sheep, which has its own lumps, has its own minds, you know, the sheep mind. It was no picnic being a German Baroque lutenist, even if you got a job doing it. The best job was conducting the orchestra for the King of Poland. And the guy who did that was sort of a sinecure for him, was Silvius Leopold Weiss. And one day in front of what was obviously a fractious orchestra, the bassoon player leapt forward and attacked Silvius and tried to bite his thumb off. We all know about bassoon players. They are always trouble. But that's really beyond the pale. I kind of hesitate to tell you what was eventually discovered, and it took decades, about these Italian strings. What was the secret of Italy? They were less lumpy, more dependable, probably smelled fresher. I mean, that really, you know, I'm not going to tell you. It's true. No, I hear people groan when I mention it. If you don't groan, I can tell you. Would Justin Bieber say something like that to a crowd? All that we have in common, but that's kind of stands out as a difference. They used lambs, not sheep. Yeah, see? That's entertainment, isn't it? So anyhow, this is a ballad. We'll play it for the lambs. First time I've done this. I really don't care about them. I mean, this was, you know, Lanchman, but it was over. What? When was the Baroque? 1650? 17? A long time ago, if you're a lad. Thank you. Did I leave this section off? That modulation, did I not go there? No, did I do it? Did I get it?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I have to say, I was playing in Kalamazoo, this is some time ago. I could remember walking on and then being at a sink in the basement washing my hands an hour and a half later. There's no interval, no time, no space time, no spine, to quote Mose Allison, none of that. I walked on, now I'm at a sink. It's all over with, crowd is clapping up there. What happened? And I immediately, I don't know, there's absolutely no grounds for this assumption, but I immediately assumed it must have been a great night. Especially if I wasn't there, you know. That hasn't happened since. Except now, it does within a given tune, and I go away. And of course, the thing about going away is you don't know you've left. You notice when you come back, and it's... I'll come back. There's no picnic up here, you know. It's not just... I'm the guy who didn't marry, pretty family brown, educated, well intentioned, good girl in our town. Where I'd be today if she had loved me too. Probably be driving kids to school. And I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. All of my good times, all my running around. One of these days I might be in your town. I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. Seen the lights of cities and I've been inside their doors. Sailed to foreign countries and walked upon that shore. I guess the guy she married was the best part of my luck. She dug him cause he drove a pickup truck. And I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. All of my good times, all my running around. One of these days I might be in your town. I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. Just how beautiful she was. Everything it takes to get a guy like me in love. Lord, I hope she's happy. She sure deserves to be, especially for what she did for me. I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. All of my good times, all my running around. One of these days I might be in your town. I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. Guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. the kitchen clock I used to watch had stopped at 5 to 5. A photograph I've never seen, a car came up the drive. I stood outside the kitchen door, and when she turned her head, I said that I was back to stay. She laughed at what I said. She said that I'd grow old, believing I was what mattered most. That I'd uncover real feelings when I got close. Tried the door and let myself thank you. It came out of something that happened some time ago. I was walking my daughter, driving my daughter over to babysit some dogs. Have you ever heard of such a thing? I hadn't at the time. And I was proud of myself for not saying babysit some dogs, you know. Okay. We approached a sort of a deciduous jungle in Minnesota and headed off through the sticks on foot. And sort of like the gingerbread house with the little oven in it. There was a doorway over in there in a house, and it had a window in it, front door. And there are these two heads, and blink, 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 like that. Of course, it was the dogs. And there were Weimaraners, Weimaraners. You know, and they're scary, just no matter what they're doing. And they kept, and I couldn't help myself. I said, is there something wrong with these dogs? And she said, they're vegetarians. So this is meat, you have meat, please. This couldn't have been, give me broccoli. Not possible. I went in there and I saw, it was broccoli, squash, yellow squash. Couldn't be pink squash, any other kind. And something else I've forgotten. I think they ate it, I couldn't watch. I turned away. Amsterdam a few years after that, and got a call from, I'd left the country, I was traumatized, and I got a call from the promoter, one of my favorite promoters. Every time in Holland, he just does this great job, and play about five or six cities, and you get to sit in Amsterdam for a couple of days. And I got a call from him. He had a great name for a promoter, Wim Visser. And Wim called and he said, I got a call from, do you want to meet a guy named Hank? I said, no. And he said, he says he's a friend of the people whose dogs your daughter used to babysit. I said, I got to meet this guy. Justin Bieber wouldn't do on stage. Oh, excuse me. Wow. I can't do this next to him because it's now a step and a half too low for my half octave range. Frizz Fuller, Frisbee Boom Boom Fuller is his full name. He's no longer with us, but several of his tunes are. If you want to hear more Frizz Fuller, you need to go see David Lindley when he's playing. He is the best exponent. It's Lindley's version of Tiki Torches at Twilight that is holding the world up just now. It all collapsed. Tiki Torches at Twilight. They're lining up at the bars. All the men from the office throwing up in their cars. Thank you. this is a frizz tune. This is a true story, actually. This comes from Frizz's first, and I believe, I'm not sure about this, last paying job about 30 years ago in a pizza parlor in Hollywood somewhere. You've been stealing the menudo from the back of pizza towers. That was the beginning of the start. This is low. You've been taking the tequila. Oh, it's too low. 1 second. There you go. That thump is a secret code that Jim and the soundboard and I have. It means I'm about to pull the jack and blow all the cones in this hall. I always liked the worm before. Yeah, this feels better. It's got a little more lift. You have to be careful with a 12 string, you know. It's descended from the elephant. And if you give it something a little too frothy, it's just going to crush it. But not, you know, violently, just like a manatee would. Sit on you. If you want to know something about elephants, you have to read. And who does? But Kay Redfield Jameson, the wonderful writer from Johns Hopkins, a psychiatrist there, has written a book called Exuberance. She thought maybe that would be a good idea, since several of her other books have been about things like suicide and, you know, bipolar disorders in the artistic community. There is no such thing as an artistic community. If they saw a community, they'd shoot it in the face. Exuberance, after you get past the entry about Snowflake Bentley, the guy that devoted his life in Vermont to collecting, wow, that might be a little more verb than we need on the vocal. It seems, oh, there we go, no? It's a rogue verb, isn't it? Got one of them. I can't speak. I can't speak. No. Jeez. Complacency with the peignoir, and late coffee and oranges in a sunny chair, and the green freedom of a cockatoo upon a rug, mingled to dissipate the holy hush of ancient sacrifice. She dreams a little, and she feels the dark encroachment of that old catastrophe as a calm darkens among water lights. The pungent oranges and bright green wings seem things in some procession of the dead, winding across wide water without sound. The day is like wide water without sound, stilled for the passing of her dreaming feet over the seas to silent Palestine, dominion of the blood and sepulchre. That's what reverb will do to you. We can't lose that, can we? You've been stealing the menudo from the back of pizza towers. That was the beginning of the start. it too hard. It's been 5 long years since you ride the train to Chico. Now you're in the back of a truck. But that's what's wrong, Robin. The last train to Chico. So goodbye, and Enrico, good luck. Things about my job, yeah. Well, they pay me. Imagine getting paid for this. You go out and play, and then they pay you. I started out with violin. I was 5 years old. That hurt. It right here. It hurts. And here it hurts. Because you're playing with other 5 year olds, you know. About as good as you are. I volunteered then for the flute. The guy told me my mouth was too big and he handed me a trombone. And because I'm easily led and compliant and gullible, virtues in a solitary life, I stuck with the trombone for probably about 10 years. And something very odd happened. A friend of mine, a trumpet player, by the time I was living in Oklahoma and I was kind of losing my mind, gave me a recording made by Jimmy Giuffre with Bob Brookmeyer, a trombone player. I had never even heard of a guitar. I didn't care about them. I was a brass player, and I thought that the trombone was my future. And I listened to this record endlessly. It was called Traveling Light, one of his drumless, pianoless trios. Beautiful, beautiful record. A few years later, many years later. Now I'm out of the Navy, sitting around, and I started playing a few places. And I remembered this recording that I swear I studied this trombone, Bob Brookmeyer, endlessly. Found the record in a record search, put it on, and Jim Hall, the guitarist, pops out of the trio. And every one of his licks had already showed up in my guitar playing. I was listening to the trombone, but I was stealing the guitar and I had no idea. you've been gone. You know, I get a tune, I wake up, and I've got it in this, you know, silent night. Or, this old man. That's cruel. The first guy to meet me when I got off the bus was Doc Watson, and he did me a very confusing sort of favor. I was doing a sound check to open for Doc at Zellerbach Auditorium in Berkeley, and Phil and I had been playing a little, you know, it's 5 PM and empty room, and Doc walks up behind me. I don't hear this, and his voice appears in my ear as a hand comes up here and grabs my low E here, and he said, his voice said, "Your low E is flat." And sharped it up for me. It was Doc. And, I haven't been able to tune the low E since. serious. That's what happened there on that one tune ago. It's really weird, though, because... excuse me. I was going to get musicological on you, and I'm not going to do that. Well, no, I will. Do you tune to the fundamental, or do you tune to the first harmonic? That's a dispute. It's actually a dispute. I mean, in my own defense, Doc could have been totally wrong. Depends, you know. And that we can blame Bach for. There is one cruelty that will never be rectified. Rectified? Excuse me. You can't rectify a cruelty. You can't make it better. You know, well, you could. I mean, if... worse is better. Could see what I'm saying. Anyhow, that was the first of many, many chances I had to share a stage with Doc. And we didn't get to play together, but rarely. And we were in Keene, New Hampshire, about maybe 10 years ago. In a dressing room, we're fooling around, and I'm playing it. And he said, "That's a nice sounding guitar." So I handed it to him. You know, this is 30 years after Berkeley, and the first thing he did was sharp the low E. I couldn't believe it. You know, this is one of the things that we got to play together, and it was this. This afternoon it started badly and turned out really great. I'd gotten a call that I want to be the cover boy of American Airlines in-flight magazine. Well, sure. Couldn't turn that down. I said, well, show up here at the studio in the Industrial Park in Nashville and bring your favorite guitar. Well, I couldn't do that. They destroyed it years ago. Pick your airline. I don't know, you know. But I had a guitar. I was recording it down. So I went down to this place, and I walked into a big warehousey kind of building. And way at the other end of the building, over there in the dark, was a scrim lit up with some lights and two other guitar players poaching on this boost into the stratosphere for my career. And I walked over to remonstrate with these dinks, and it was Chet Atkins and Doc Watson. And each of them, without any mention of the other two, had been asked to come down and become the cover boy of American Airlines. We were embarrassed, you know. So, and they brought their unfavorite guitars as well. So we started playing. Now I get to say that. That's what I was driving at. One of the great things about this job. And there we are, fooling around. And we played this next tune because Doc and I had played it. And he liked the tune a lot. Played for a while. It kind of finished or whatever. And Chet said, "What is that?" And I said, "It's Fahey wrote it." But when I asked him about it, because I can't, you know, this one section that doesn't make, I can't figure it out. He said he didn't know how to tell me how to play that because he didn't write the tune. I said, "Yes, you did. You have the copyright, and I've heard you play." And he said, "No, I didn't write it. I stole it from Sam McGee." And Chet said, "I knew Sam McGee. And he never wrote anything like that." So this is a new tune of mine that I'd like to thank you. Stick them into a set. The set has a curve, and you follow the curve. You don't make it up. It just, you know, you follow.
Play Freebird!
No. And this is called The Fisherman, and I fixed it. Here was the problem. That chord, which is just as clunky as my grandma's foot. And that's the chord that I needed. Not this one. This one. Not much difference, but it made it possible to play this thing. The Fisherman is my grandmother, Ethel Olive Cluxton, and she was the angriest fisherwoman I have ever known. You go out in a boat with her, she'd drop her worm in the water and just start right then, you know, fish. She wrote Pulp Fiction. She wrote stories for, you know, that light over there, just blink. It's going in one eye and staying in the other one. And then I see 15 dots instead of one, two, three, you know. Look how I'm sitting here. This is brilliant. Damn. This is what Fritz Fuller was doing when I first met him, near a fireplace, but he wasn't leaning on it, he was just leaning. He didn't have a microphone that he was trying to reach, it was more like... Where was I? Other than I better just play this. Thank you. So as long, there I am. As long as I'm playing some of this old stuff, I'm going to play some more olds. It's another one I quit for a long time, and there was a whole section in it that sucked, and I couldn't bear it. But I could fix it, but when I fixed it, it didn't work, and it was because it was an anachronism. I wrote this when I was an embryo, and now I'm not, and it shows when you know, it's like, I don't know, it doesn't work. It's like Abe Lincoln with a wristwatch. So I realized what I should do is go back to when I did write it and steal something from that era, and it should fit, and I did. So I'd like to thank Tommy James and the Shondells for this.
Thank you.
I never know what I'm going to play. And I, thing for 30 years maybe, because I drove it into the ground. But and then I saw Mick Jagger do Satisfaction, and I thought maybe I'll it's the oldest, also the oldest tune I've got. And it's weird going back there, you know. A different head. I mean, whatever I've got now doesn't coexist well with that head. It likes the tunes, but it doesn't want to go anywhere near the guy that wrote them. I remember him. But I remember loving Propulsion. I was still in high school. I was at the, as it turns out, it was the first, no, well, at any rate, watermelon, no. This is difficult. Whippoorwill Lake, and they have an annual festival. This was when they really were festivals, and people probably shouldn't be on stage, would be on stage. You'd hear all kinds of stuff, and it'd come from Whippoorwill Lake, I think, was in North Carolina. And this stuff, you know, people who built their banjos with a possum and a stick. Serious, Frank Prophet, people like that. It was mind-bending. And you'd stay there for 2 days, and I was sitting on the fender of my dad's Nash Rambler in the middle of the night playing a banjo, and these two guys that sort of surfaced, I mean, out of the earth, just fried, I mean, fried, old guys, and they stood there, and I stopped playing, you know, because they scared me. And I stood there, and then one of them said, this one said, Why don't you play something on it? Would you play something on your banjo? I said, okay, and I played something, and this guy threw up on himself. I mean, he didn't bother to point, lean. I had to stop playing. And the other guy said, oh, no, that he shouldn't have done that. And they walked away. And because of that, I gave up the banjo. It's about 80% true. But I kept some of that feel, you know. It is always a privilege to play. Never thought this would become a job.